This is VOA News, via remote. I'm Michael Brown. The White House task force said the United States should be prepared to see upwards of 240,000 deaths from the COVID-19 coronavirus over the next 2 months, even if Americans continue to keep their distance from each other. The group says peak number of deaths will come over the next 2 to 3 weeks. President Trump predicted this is going to be one of the roughest 2 or 3 weeks we've ever had in our country. The U.S. Treasury Department says Americans will start receiving their economic impact checks in the next 3 weeks. The payments are part of the $2.2 trillion rescue package signed into law last week by President Trump, aimed at combating the economic ravages of the coronavirus outbreak. Most people don't need to do anything to get the money, but some, including senior citizens and low-income people who might not traditionally file tax returns, do need to take action. People behind on filing their taxes might also want to get caught up. Vietnam is the latest country to go into a nationwide lockdown because of the coronavirus. The 15-day period starts Wednesday, with officials telling people to avoid gatherings in groups of three or more. At the start of the lockdown, there were 212 confirmed cases in Vietnam and no deaths, and authorities want to keep it there. Mexico has declared a month-long health emergency with new restrictions on the size of gatherings to contain the coronavirus that already exceeds 1,000 cases with 28 deaths there. Mexico's foreign minister said violators of the new rules will face penalties. For details on more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. From our remote location, this is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the United States is willing to lift sanctions against Venezuela in exchange for the formation of a transitional government comprised of allies of President Nicolas Maduro and opposition leader Juan Guaido. The plan calls on President Maduro and Mr. Guaido to hand over power to a five-member council until presidential and parliamentary elections can be held later this year. Officials facing accusations of human rights abuses and drug trafficking are not eligible for sanctions relief, but members of Maduro's socialist government who have been blacklisted would benefit. A transitional government is unlikely to be supported by President Maduro. A Taliban delegation arrived in Kabul on Tuesday to monitor the long-delayed release of their 5,000 detainees under a prison swap with the Afghan government brokered by the United States. This is the first time representatives of the Islamist insurgency have visited the Afghan capital since a U.S.-led military invasion of the country ousted the Taliban from power nearly 19 years ago. The prisoner exchange, which requires the insurgent group to free about 1,000 government detainees, is supposed to lay the ground for peace negotiations between Afghan parties to the conflict. The crucial peace-building steps are outlined in the February 29th agreement that Washington signed with the Taliban in Qatar, which aims to promote a negotiated end to years of a deadly Afghan war. And the Trump administration announced Tuesday it was cutting tough automobile mileage standards established by the Obama administration designed to reduce tailpipe emissions and fight climate change. The Trump administration argues relaxing mileage standards will save automakers money and make vehicles cheaper for Americans to buy. But opponents say Americans will spend far more on fuel than they will save on a new car, and the new lower standards will result in sharp increases in greenhouse gas emissions. Former President Obama reacted to the news on his Twitter account Tuesday, including a link to a news story about the regulations and comparing the current coronavirus to climate change. Obama said, "We've seen all too terribly the consequences of those who denied warnings of a pandemic. We can't afford any more consequences of climate denial." As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. From our remote location, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone confirms its first case of the coronavirus.
The patient originally arrived on a Brussels airline flight from Paris on the 16th March. On the last day of his quarantine, he started showing symptoms. He was duly tested and proved positive.
Mohamed Rahman Swari, Sierra Leone's information minister, some Kenyan companies have begun pay cuts and firing of employees due to COVID-19. We'll talk with a World Food Program official about Zimbabwe's food crisis amid coronavirus. Coronavirus compounds the suffering of Cameroon's conflict-ridden English-speaking regions. And Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission indicts 5 officials for alleged corruption.
The whole idea is to make sure that justice is delivered in the fight against corruption fairly for everybody, irrespective of your tribe, language, religion, or political view.
And we'll have a story about what could be the missing link in the transmission of the COVID-19 coronavirus between bats and humans. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Has confirmed its first case of the coronavirus. Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Swari says the individual arrived in Sierra Leone on March 16 from Paris, France, and began showing symptoms on the last day of his quarantine. He says the individual tested positive and has since been receiving treatment. Sierra Leone closed its borders last week without a single coronavirus case. Minister Swari says President Julius Maada Bio on Tuesday announced a number of measures, including the indefinite closure of all schools.
Today, His Excellency President Julius Maada Bio announced Sierra Leone's index case in our response to the COVID-19. The patient originally arrived on a Brussels airline flight from Paris, which arrived here on the 16th March. On the last day of his quarantine, he started showing symptoms. He was duly tested and proved positive. He has since been in the treatment center. Contacts are being traced to ensure that nobody is left off the hook.
President Maada Bio spoke to the nation. What did he have to say? In other words, what measures has the government put in place?
His Excellency reassured that we are not in lockdown. He advised all citizens to go about their normal business with minimal impairment to movement, because many public places will now be regulated. Public trade fairs have been closed down. Traditional secret societies have been banned for the time being, and a whole raft of other measures to ensure containment of this disease. Again, he stressed the need for social distancing. He stressed the need for suspending some key traditional values like warm embraces, like handshakes, and urge all to report any suspicious manifestations of symptoms to the appropriate medical authorities or by dialing 117, which is the emergency medical response number here.
Your country and Liberia and, say, Guinea were some of the countries most affected by the Ebola crisis. Do you see a ghost of Ebola with this coronavirus situation?
Well, we still have sad memories of Ebola. We have taken those experiences on board. His Excellency has provided strong leadership to bring on board those who were in the front line of the Ebola response program. So, yes, we have experience dealing with Ebola. We have strong political will, which is why several months on, we are only registering our first case here. We have pledged to deepen that commitment. His Excellency reassured Sierra Leoneans today that his government will do everything and anything to ensure that we are able to contain this disease so that it does not become the monumental disaster that Ebola was.
Mohamed Rahman Swari, Sierra Leone's information minister, you're speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. Some companies in Kenya have introduced pay cuts and firing of employees barely 3 weeks after the COVID-19 pandemic struck the country. Already, leading companies like the Standard Media Group, Royal Media Services, and Kenya Airways have introduced mandatory pay cuts for their workers, ranging between 20 to 75%, as others declare redundancy. Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Kenya is still recording high number of COVID-19 positive cases as companies struggling to pay employees despite government regulations to reduce tax. Most companies have already sent their employees on an unpaid leave as others receive pay cuts. Jen Waithera, one of the employees in a leading media house in Kenya, received her pay cut of 20% as a junior staff, and she says the move has disoriented most of her plans and that she may not be able to foot her bills in the near future.
The company has decided that the best thing to do is to slash our salaries. Previous times when they made profits, have they ever given bonuses? No. Now, with a global pandemic that is not our fault, on top of cutting our salaries, they are forcing us to take a 30-day leave. And it's really sad because that means that when you go back to work, you can never go on leave. And if you decide to resign, they will deduct it from your paycheck.
The move by the government to ban most of the entertainment places and impose curfew on its citizens has seen most of employees depending on hotel industry as well as hand-to-mouth laborers suffering the most. Ms. Jen says most of the private companies do not have job security, especially at this time when the pandemic has hit.
For one, I don't think there's anything like job security in that company, to be honest. On top of that, people had loans, people had SACCO contributions, and when such a slash comes out of nowhere, you really wonder how you're supposed to cope with it. On top of reducing salaries, they've also cut allowances. So even the safety net that people had is no longer there.
Another Kenyan, Stephen Marsh, working for Kenya Airways, says the aviation industry has suffered the most after he received a 75% pay cut and forced to proceed on leave.
The aviation industry in which I work in has been hit hard, with most of the aircrafts being grounded. We have been asked to take a 75% pay cut and proceed on leave, left with only 25%, which is the average most employee pay for rent. Life is going to be tough. The pay cut will bite hard when it is effected in the month of April.
Kenya's Ministry of Health says already the country has recorded 59 COVID-19 positive patients as per yesterday Tuesday, and the number is likely to increase drastically. Acting Director General Ministry of Health Patrick Amoth said that chances are high by the end of April, Kenya will record at least 10,000 COVID-19 positive cases.
Modeling puts us at having about 1,000 cases by the first week of April, and we postulate that we'll have 5,000 cases by mid-April and potentially 10,000 cases by 30th of April. So those are the figures that we are working with in terms of how we preposition our personal protective equipment.
The more the number increases, the more the government imposes more rules to combat the COVID-19 pandemic, hence affecting the economy. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Even before the coronavirus pandemic made its way to Zimbabwe, nearly half the population needed food assistance because of a prolonged drought and the country's economic collapse. Reporter Kuzai Nambashi recently spoke with the World Food Program's top official in Zimbabwe about the challenges the organization faces now that the country is dealing with a long lockdown to fight the virus.
World Food Program Country Director Eddie Rowe says the coronavirus has pushed his staff to find new solutions to address food insecurity.
Listen, our mantra, and this is our vision, is to make sure that under any circumstances, we do not have a major negative impact on our food assistance to the Zimbabweans. Now, you would have noted that we suspended food distribution for 1 week in order for us to put in place the measures announced by the government as well as the guidelines that were provided by WHO.
Roy says the outbreak could worsen the situation for the 7.5 million Zimbabweans who face food insecurity.
Even though at the moment we do not have any known cure medicines, but with any illness, in order for the medicines to take effect or for the individual to survive, you need to have your minimum standard food needs per day.
He says his staff is already implementing new procedures so they should be able to resume food distribution soon.
Happy to say that most of these measures we've now been able to put in place, procurement of personal protective equipment items. We've redesigned the distribution centers to comply with the crowd control. And we are now looking forward to resume our food distribution. We intend to reach 3.7 million Zimbabweans with food assistance for this month of March.
Rowe says the WFP will partner with the Ministry of Health to help ensure everyone is safe during the food distribution. The agency has increased the number of the distribution centers and will work to make sure that no more than 50 people can be at any center at a time to comply with government orders. Because the coronavirus pandemic has affected neighboring countries and regional food supplies, the WFP has had to seek new sources of food.
In the past years, most of the commodities we used to buy regionally, I would say mainly Zambia, South Africa, and Malawi. This year, since March, about 30% of the commodities we've been buying internationally. I give you an example. We are expecting 3 vessels, one from Mexico, one from Ukraine, and another one from Tanzania.
He says they are in the middle of buying more, but shortages in other places, plus rising commodity prices and shipping costs, could affect amounts available. In addition to distributing food, Rowe says the WFP is working with other organizations to help spread awareness of the virus. For VOA, this is Kudzai Sunawashi from Harare.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 1st. The people of Cameroon's English-speaking regions, who for the past 4 years have had to deal with the conflict between the Cameroon military and separatists, now have a new crisis to contend with, the coronavirus pandemic. Solomon Aborin is editor of the Star newspaper in the crisis-ridden English-speaking regions. He says the COVID-19 pandemic has added to the misery of the people.
First of all, most owners of small businesses closed their shops at 6 p.m., consequently a drop in sales and profit due to the outbreak of the coronavirus down here in the southwest region of Cameroon. Of course, intercity transport has also been affected, coupled with the shutting down of schools. So far, inhabitants are also experiencing very high prices in basic commodities. We'll begin with the hand sanitizers that used to sell at about 500 CFA is now 1,500 CFA.
Of course, Solomon, in addition to the coronavirus, the region has the crisis of the separatists. How has the separatist crisis also affected the region?
The separatist crisis, it's affected development projects in the southwest region, as most projects have been abandoned, James. And of course, those who own shops and have invested in businesses that have moved to other regions of Cameroon. So far, there is also no room for new investors to come into the region due to the security climate.
A spokesperson for the separatists just informed me that the separatists will be declaring a lockdown in the region. What do you expect to be the impact of this lockdown? And could you tell us also what has been the impact of previous lockdowns?
I think at the onset of the crisis, the lockdowns were very effective. But in the past months, what the people feel here on the ground is that of frustration. It's a feeling of frustration because no concrete reason is usually given for the lockdown. Now, take for example, every Monday is meant to be a lockdown or a ghost town day. But so far in past months, this is not being respected by people anymore because the reasons are not justifiable. People are really frustrated with this because most of them think that the separatist leaders have lost touch with the local community and they do not have concrete reason why to bring on this without consulting the people.
Solomon Agborin is editor of the Star newspaper in Cameroon's crisis-ready English-speaking regions. A new study suggests pangolins, also known as the scaly antelope, may be the missing link in the transmission of the COVID-19 coronavirus between bats and humans. Pangolins are said to be the most trafficked animal species on Earth, and much of the trade in live pangolins is from Africa to Asia. Other studies have suggested humans contracted the virus from bats via snakes. Either way, wildlife trafficking appears to have played a key role in the outbreak. Scientists believe the virus jumped to first infect humans at a market in the Chinese city of Wuhan, where live animals and wild animal parts were sold. Paul Elkan is the Sudan-Sahel Region Director for the Wildlife Conservation Society. He spoke with viewers Jason Pantinki about the illegal pangolin trade and the global health risks of trafficking any wildlife species.
Viktor Orban has been in power since 2010, and he has a two-thirds supermajority in parliament, and that should be enough for him to, you know, have all the powers to fight the coronavirus epidemic. But he says that since this is a state of emergency, he needed the parliament's approval to hand him basically extraordinary powers for an indefinite period of time, which would include the power to rule by government decrees, meaning that he can pass laws, he can repeal laws, he can modify existing laws without parliamentary approval. He does have a two-third majority in parliament. He can do anything with the MPs sitting there. But the fear is that this virus will be so serious that lots of his own parliamentarians will fall ill. So in case the parliament is not able to fulfill its duty, he wanted to ensure that he has the same powers.
How are opposition parties, civil society leaders, rights activists, how are they reacting to this?
So this government has a track record of cracking down on the free media and on civil society. So, of course, all the opposition parties and most of the NGOs were quite worried that the government will use its extra powers against them again. In this new emergency law, there's a paragraph that says that anyone who's intentionally spreading false news or distorting truth in a way that is detrimental to the government's measures trying to fight the coronavirus. So anyone who does that can be punished with a maximum of 5 years jail time. But the law is very vague. So what is a distortion of truth? Is it a distortion of truth if I disclose different figures of casualties than the government does? We had a shortage of face masks. Our healthcare system is quite run down. It's underfunded. If we report on these facts, then are we committing a crime according to this new law? This might have a chilling effect on media outlets.
What about in terms of reaction from other European Union member states?
So the member states are quite preoccupied with their own situation, so they are not really vocal about what's going on in other countries. But the European Commission, basically the leadership of the European Union, has been criticizing these moves. They were saying that, of course, every government has to do its job in order to protect its citizens, but these should be in line with European values and with European laws. So there's some concern, but our government is basically pushing back on these, saying that the European Union is unable to give actual help to member states like Hungary, And instead of getting protective equipment from other member states, they need to buy everything from China. So basically their argument is that this is not the time to think about theoretical legal questions regarding this law. This is the time to save lives. And if you cannot help us, then please don't hinder our efforts trying to protect the people.
How valid is this argument about needing these extra powers in order to fight this disease?
That's what no one understands, because the government already has much more power than any other European Union member state. No other European Union member is taking similar measures. In the Philippines, the president of the Philippines, Duterte, came up with a similar idea to have state of emergency situation for a period of time, which will be decided by him when it ends. That's the only example I can give. There are no similar examples inside the European Union.
That was Paul Elkann, the Sudan or Sahel region director for the Wildlife Conservation Society. He spoke with viewers Jason Pantinkin from Nairobi. Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission on Tuesday indicted five individuals, including the Minister of Labor and Social Security, Alpha Osmar Timbo, on 15 counts of corruption, including misappropriation of public property and conspiracy. Anti-Corruption Commission Chief Francis Ben Kaifala says Mr. Timbo, in his capacity as Minister of Basic and Senior Secondary Education, allegedly conspired last year with the others to misappropriate 49,000 bags of 50-kilogram rice that was meant for Sierra Leone's school feeding program. Kaifala says the indictments reaffirm President Julius Maada Bio's commitment to leave no stone unturned when it comes to fighting corruption.
About 50,000 bags of rice was donated to the Ministry of Agriculture by the Chinese government, and that rice was later, by cabinet agreement or conclusion, was given to the Ministry of Education for it to be applied for the school feeding program. And somehow it was supposed to have been given to the BFP for them to engage in the school feeding for the government of Sierra Leone as fiduciaries. And the rice was not given to them. The ministry decided to distribute it itself. And in the process, itself was completely irregular. A lot of corrupt practices ensued. And of course, most of the rice, or almost all of it, was misappropriated in the process. That is what we are accusing him of.
You have also charged four other people with conspiracy. How did this conspiracy occur?
They agreed among themselves to do most or all of the things that happened. And that agreement is where the criminal conspiracies happened. And of course, with conspiracy, all of them don't have to sit in one room to agree. If by understanding each did something which furthered the intentions of the other, then of course the offense would have been completed. So we are saying that they conspired to commit several corruption offenses, including misappropriation, including failure to follow laid down guidelines, and also to disguise the true nature of properties that belong to the government so as to hide their illicit nature.
These individuals now, were they arrested and imprisoned?
Individuals in question were granted bail whilst the investigation was going on. The investigation took about 3 months. So during that time, they were on bail. And they remain on bail, but they will appear in court. And then in court, their bail will have to be reviewed afresh by the court. And the position of the ACC now is to oppose bail.
Is there a particular message that your commission wishes to send to the people of Sierra Leone by these indictments?
It sends a clear message that the president of Sierra Leone means it when he says that there are no sacred cows, and everybody who infringes the law, particularly with corrupt practices, we are going to make sure that we leave no stone unturned. The whole idea is to make sure that justice is delivered in the fight against corruption fairly for everybody, irrespective of your tribe, language, religion, or political view.
Francis Ben Kaifala is Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission Chief. You're speaking with us from the capital of Freetown. That is it for this Wednesday, April 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation. Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.